Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
November 27th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Gobble Gobble Long.
Gobble Gobble, baby. Happy Turkey Day.
You know, it's a really happy Turkey Day for me because I'm out here in Thunder Valley for Ante Up Tour event, which means I didn't have to get up this morning and plod through a 5K for the Turkey Trot, the one of the few races I run every year, and I never trained for them. So I can make it without walking. That's always my goal, and I've never had to walk. But I get to the end and I'm exhausted. So this morning I got up, I watched Survivor on the live stream, and I'm doing the show, and then I'm going to go for a nice hour walk instead of a 5K run.
Yeah, that's what we did this morning. We did our 3-mile walk, and you know, just another thing I was thinking about when I was walking today is I always think of this episode as our like redheaded stepchild. I always think no one's going to listen to this show because it comes out on a we're on actually a Turkey Day recording it. But you know, it comes out on that Thursday. Everyone's filling their mouths with food today, at least in America. And tomorrow they're going to be recovering from that. And then Saturday is going to be the weekend. And by the time they go back to work, and then they're going to forget all about this show.
See, I would disagree. I think it's the exact opposite. I think right now there are tons of our listeners clicking that little refresh button on their website, like, when is Cosenza going to post the show? I'm so tired of talking to my relatives about politics. I need my poker pit.
So then I can't get away with saying a bunch of swear words and about like some other sport or whatever today. I have to actually continue with the actual plan. We used to do the conkeys on, was it this day?
No, conkeys are at the end of the year usually.
Oh, because I remember it was like turkeys. We were talking about turkeys or something. I thought that's when we do conkeys.
I think one year we actually did Thanksgiving poker turkeys, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember doing something like that. But
this year it's just two of us are the only turkeys.
So, all right. So how are things going at Thunder Valley?
Yeah, it's absolutely a blast. I always love being out here. You know, it's funny. I was getting out of the elevator last night when I came back, and the carpet, everything here, it feels like I'm always here. And yeah. I guess it is because we always do two big events here every year, and then usually I come out one other time during the year for whatever reason. So it does feel like I think I spent – actually, I was talking to one of our fans, Randy San, who was on our show not too bad long ago. He came out and played a couple events. And I was telling him, this is the place that I spend more nights a year, second most nights a year besides my house.
Yeah.
Unless you combine all the cruise ships together. But
maybe a cruise ship.
So you can't really count it. So.
Yeah.
But no, it feels like home out here, and you know, if I had to be somewhere for Thanksgiving, this is the weird place I want to be. Obviously, it's our fourth Ante Up NorCal Classic, Ante Up Poker Tour event, and had dinner with Ben Irwin, the director of poker operations, out here a couple nights ago. And every time we get together, we just kind of shake our heads and think about 4.5 years ago when I just kind of drove to this place on a lark and had lunch with him, and didn't think anything was going to come out of it. He didn't think anything was going to come out of it, and then next thing you know, we're hosting his first major tournament series, and now things are just going crazy here for him. You know, he does two a year for us. He does Heartland. He does WPT. And now, coming soon, there'll be an announcement that he's doing Poker Night in America next year. So all kinds of good things coming out here in Thunder Valley. So, we're out here. I'm sure everybody knows where we are now because I talk about it all the time, but we're just north of Sacramento, California a couple days ago. You know, my little Google phone, just gives you updates and stuff, and winter storm warning, and I'm like, what? Like, I know it's a little chilly out here, but winter storm warning, and I keep forgetting there are mountains literally, like, with eye shot from here.
Yeah, right.
And I was going to go over and try to check out and see some of our friends over in Reno Monday, and I don't think I'm going to make it. I don't think I can get to the mountains now.
So, oh, man.
Kind of crazy. But anyhow, it's warm and fuzzy inside here. Our tournament started off with a bang. First event, event one, a $400 buy-in, single flight, single day event. Absolutely Matt mayhem. 495 entries, the most they've ever done here, I think, ever for a single flight. And could have got a couple more in, but it was interesting how, because all the tournaments here are one re-entry, so it's not multiple re-entries. Yeah, he's kind of taking that whole world championship vibe through every event here. So, you know, it does mean something now. You know, you get knocked out once or you can get back in, but you get knocked out that second time, you're going to the cash games, right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't here for that one yet. I got here a day after it. But they said during the middle of it, they were announcing alternate 80, alternate 81. So it kind of slowed some of the play down because some of the players that were still in it and still had a re-entry to go didn't feel confident that they were going to be able to get back in if they got knocked out, right?
Wow.
So play tightened up a little bit. And then towards the end, they were able to seat people instantaneously and had room to get more people in. So Ben was really hoping to hit that 500 number, probably would have if it wasn't so clogged up at the beginning, but 495 is amazing for the first event. And then we have somebody on the move. We have a lot of people on the move for our Player of the Year race, but one in particular, Mike Postel, moved up to like sixth after the first event. He's cashed in three now, and then moved up to second yesterday by winning the horse event. And now he's just a mere like 100 points off the top, and he is motivated to win this. So our Player of the Year gets a five nights and a suite here, and I'll tell you, the regular rooms here are what I would call suites anywhere else. So I can't even imagine what a suite looks like here. But the Player of the Year gets five nights and a suite during the World Championship, plus the $250 food credit. And I was talking to Mike yesterday, and he's like, you know, I've never competed for a Player of the Year in my life, and this is very exciting, and I'm here for the entire week, and I'm going to do it. And so he's been texting me towards the end. He gets close to bubble. He bubbled a couple events too. So if he had to cashed in any of those, he probably would be our Player of the Year, leading for the Player of the Year right now. So a lot of excitement going on out here.
Cool.
Of course, I played, and there was a severe lack of excitement in my play this time. And I feel bad because I've never not cashed at Thunder Valley any time I've been here. I've always cashed. I've won a couple events. At least I can keep my streak of final tables alive. I did final table the first event, the Pot Limit Omaha 8. Got off the plane and popped right into that, got the final table, but ended up going out ninth. And then they did an ICM chop with seven left. They knocked one guy more out, guy out for the chop, and everybody got money except for me. And Howard Tahoe Andrew, a two-time bracelet winner, that's legend out here. He went out eighth. And then they chopped it up after that. I'm like, oh, that's great. When you wake up in the morning and I go to post the results, and I'm like, ugh.
They're just waiting to get you and the legend out.
Thanks, guys. That's awesome.
I'll be giving them all a little something special. I paid them all to do that.
I didn't put this on the show notes, but it's probably interesting to talk about. So they did an ICM chop, right? So it's all based on chip equity, right?
Yeah.
And so the seventh place person took home $176. Now, this is a $200 buy-in event. So my question to you, and they do it out here at Thunder Valley, they do it a wonderful way. They have the chop discussion. Once everybody agrees on what the chop parameters are, then they bring out these cards, like placards, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they say yes or no on them.
Right, yeah.
Turn them up face down, and they mix them all up and shuffle, and then they turn them up. And if there's one no, then the tournament goes on until the next chop discussion comes up. That way it's anonymous, and no one really knows who did it, unless obviously there's usually a loud mouth guy, I drive a chop, and then you know who it is, right? But it gives you some protection if you're a player that doesn't want to chop but doesn't want to get beaten up in the parking lot,
right?
Or at the table. So my question to you, Chris, is if you were that seventh place guy, and you knew going into the chop vote that you were going to lose $24 on this tournament, which is still $176 more than everybody else in this tournament got, right?
Yeah.
Would you take that deal?
If it looked like there was just not a chance that I can come back from seventh, like if I had, you know, one big blind or something and I'm just grateful to be in the money, yeah, I would take the deal. I'd be grateful to get 3/4 or 7/8 of my buy-in back.
Something
to know, yeah, something instead of nothing, because I know even if I double up on the next hand, people aren't going to go all in. They're going to wait till I get knocked out, and more people are going to call me if I'm so short. Now, if it's one of those things where I'm like one chip different from the guy on my left, and I'm the seventh place guy, I'm not chopping then. I would say, look,
I don't think it was that. I think six was like 300 and some. So six actually made some money, not a lot, but probably double.
With the person, like, that's the other thing too, is if I'm so far out of it, then I'll take the deal and keep my money and be happy. But if I'm like, say, my stack is the same as the guy next to me, but only one chip difference, then I'm thinking, well, this isn't right. You know, if will you pool seventh and sixth together and cut that in half or something? Because it's I'm just one chip different than him, then I might not accept that deal. The other thing is, then sometimes you might want to say before you go into the chop, hey. And of course, if you're in seventh, then they clearly know who's not chopping if they don't do it this way. But you know how there's a curve in high school where they give you a curve for everyone to bring it up to an A, and then everyone's grades are same with that. You know, last place in this chop needs to get back its money, so you do a chop that way, and then you build your chop. Then I would say, yeah, that's sort of fair to me. But if you're going to lose money and the guy next to you has one chip more than you, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, I think at the very least, if I was the last guy, I'd be like, hey, I know we're doing this, you know, chip equity and math and all that, but come on, am I really going to have to lose $24 on this tournament? Can't you number one player that's getting $1,700
yeah.
throw me 24, throw me a Jackson and a couple Washingtons and call it a day?
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe that's just a psychological thing. I mean, I don't think that really changes what the reason I brought it up, whether I get 200 or whether I lose 26, but... Definitely, if I felt like I needed to take the deal, I definitely would have tried to angle to at least get my money back.
Right.
Wash, right?
Right.
I was talking to the guy that finished first in that deal the next day, and I told him I don't think I would take in that deal. I think it's hard to say because I don't know exactly what the chips were, the blinds were, all that. All I can go on is just the amount of money that people were paid out. So obviously that seventh place person was way on life support, right?
Right.
I would think, or they wouldn't get less than their buy-in, right? And I don't know where the blinds were, too. I mean, if I'm coming right into the blind next, then I'm going to have to just roll the dice. All right, maybe I'll go ahead and lock in my 176. But if I still had some position there, I think I'm going to take a shot. I think we're going to take a shot that I can double up. Again, it's PLO 8, so you're not really – you've got two chances of staying alive every time you're all
right,
in.
Right.
And hope I can just move up a little bit, and they knock one more person out, and then they do another deal. At that point, I know I'm going to lock a profit in, right?
Yeah.
I would think. So I don't think I would take the deal. I mean, obviously not knowing all the particulars, but just what I know, I think I don't think I would settle to take less money than I bought in for a tournament.
No, I agree. It's a good thing to talk about because you might experience this, and you want to try to right now discuss all of the possible, not all of them, but many of the options here. In my case, if you and I are at the same table and you have 4,700 and I have 4,650, and they're like, okay, we're going to chop. Of course, you're going to vote for it because you're going to guarantee your money back, and I'm not. And we have the exact same opportunity to either go home empty-handed or to finish in sixth, where we're going to make $300 if we don't chop.
Right.
So, I mean, at that point, you got to say to them, hey, I don't mind chopping, but you got to pay us equally. Otherwise, I mean, I guess that's the thing about it, too, the ICM.
Yeah, it kind of ruins that.
It kind of ruins that because you're going to get the same amount anyway.
And they're like, what? It doesn't compute my brain that you want to take a little here and there.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
I forget about the ICM part being if you're doing ICM, then the person who only has one chip more than you is going to get the same amount of money as you probably. So, yeah, I think I would say to them, hey, if you guys can throw us a couple of Andrew Jacksons here to make it so I'm not losing money, you know, because I've already paid my fee. I'd like to get some money back, but I'd like to get all my money back if that's possible. If it doesn't look like it's going to happen, I still take the chop, I think, you know, if I have somebody equal with me, you know. But if I have, you know, if I'm – or I don't know. I guess I don't know. It's hard to say. If I'm really, really, really short stacked, I'm definitely taking the deal because there's just no chance I'm going to get to sixth place, you know, even if it's PLO.
Well, there's no chance. I guess that's what I'm saying is, you know, you've got two chances to stay alive, you know, as long as you're able to move in with a hand that goes both ways, which if you're short stacked, you probably don't get that luxury. You know, you're going to take whatever hand you get.
Right.
But I guess that's what I'm thinking is I think that the top chip leaders had a massive chip, so they weren't in danger of going out. But I think the rest, I mean, you could make towards the end of this tournament. In fact, our listener, Randy, was at my table right before we moved down to the final table, and he actually was part of the chop and got some money out of it. But there was a hand where I had like maybe 4,000 left. I went all in and tripled up, or quadrupled up, whatever it was. And he made a comment. He's like, "Wow, you went from being on life support to being, you know, above average in chips now." Yeah. In one hand.
Yeah.
So I think that you got to play that into it too. If you actually, and I hate to say get lucky because it's never the way you want to say in poker, but I think it's pretty easy to flip the script and go from. I mean, this isn't a chip in a chair situation. This is, you know, if you get a couple of people in, you're going to get action, and all of a sudden you can move from seventh to fourth, maybe in chips in one hand, potentially.
Right.
And at that point, I think it's worth the gamble for the 176 to maybe get into a position where I can get 800 out of this tournament.
Well, again, that's like flipping coins. I mean, I don't know. The other thing, too, is the ICM is the key. Just because it's ICM doesn't mean you can't say, all right, we're going to do in the chip. Independent chip model bullshit all you want, but I need to know, are you going to, you know, bring me up to an X amount of money before that? Because just because you're doing ICM doesn't mean you can't, you know, still negotiate. Right. You know, sure. if they want to be rigid with it and stuff, then it changes a lot of things in my mind.
Yeah, my experience is people that like to do ICMs don't like to deviate from it. So
yeah, well, you know, so okay, so I have 12 chips and now you're going to give me $18? I mean, come on. You know what I mean? It's just...
Here's the other thing, too. We talk about leverage. You know, Howard Lederer in that great chapter, right, talks about leverage in poker, right?
Right.
Here's the situation where leverage without chips, you know, you're not playing, but if I'm the chip leader here, I've got leverage. I don't care. I don't really necessarily want to chop here, right?
Yeah.
So if somebody just says, no, fine, I'll keep playing on, you know.
But if they do the thing with the placards, then is there a discussion, or is it just...
There's a discussion feeding into it before there has to be an agreement on what the deal is before the placards come out.
Oh, okay, so that's cool. Yeah.
Right.
So there you go. So if you can talk your way into, you know, making what you want to make out of it, or it's being realistic, saying, look, I have no motivation to chop here because you're going to give me $50. You know, I mean, I could double up and then you guys are going to want to chop and one of you guys might get it in and, you know, you're the ones taking the risk, not me now. So,
well, there's also some mind games too, yeah. I think, right? The fact that it's anonymous, and this is what I like about it too. So, I mean, if you're that seventh place guy, right, we're talking about here, and you're the one that votes against it, no one's going to assume that it's you, right?
Right.
They're going to assume that it's one of the chip leaders that's being greedy, and that changes the dynamic at the table as well, too. So, you're still going to have to survive. I mean, it's funny because I just spent 2 hours watching Survivor this morning, so, and it's the greatest season ever, and in all these different. Things you have to think about going into the vote, and I think it's the same thing with these chop discussions. So I think there's something to be said for being that mystery guy that says no and taking a chance that, you know, things are going to work out. Things might still not work out. Your back's against the wall, so, you know, it's a $176 decision, I guess, on whether you can survive and at least maybe double it or even quadruple it, which I think you probably could.
Right.
But I think a lot of people probably would take that money. I was curious when I was posting the results, and I'm like, wow, somebody settled for less than they bought in. So, good discussion, though.
Yes.
All right, well, I mentioned that was my best tournament so far. A couple funny things came up. Early at my very first table, flop came jack, jack, jack. I had a jack in my hand, so that's a pretty good flop for me, right?
Yeah.
Guy had pocket aces and laid it down.
No way.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I got a little bit out of him on the flop. I think I checked that he bet, and I called. And then on the turn, I think we might have both checked. And then the river, I put out a bet, and he folded. It might have been that, or I bet out on the turn, and he folded. But whatever it was, I thought that was pretty amazing. And the guy's like, hey, when I bet on that flop and you called, there's only one hand you could call me with.
Yeah.
Which I don't really necessarily believe. I mean, we're talking a $200 tournament, so it plays a little bit better than maybe the $125. But I think there's a lot of people that would make that call with pocket kings or pocket queens.
Yeah, maybe. Was there a raising preflop?
Yeah, there must have been.
Yeah.
I mean, if he had aces, I would think he did, but I can't remember. But I would think there probably was.
Yeah, if there's raising preflop, you could have kings. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Some people just raise in with ace deuce, you know, queen queen or ace deuce tray and not even have a high hand, you know, just suited ace in there. So,
I'll also say that's probably the guy that's going to go pretty far in a tournament that can lay that hand down. Because I think a lot of people go broke with that.
Wow.
But that was interesting. And then I had a couple hands later, I actually flopped quad fours, had a pocket fours in my hand, and two fours came on the board. Got some chips there, fortunately, because it was fours, right? So there's a five on board, so I had the ace deuce guy strung along for a while and missed his low. But quads, two flop quads in like 20 minutes.
Man.
Pretty fun.
And you still don't cash.
Right, still don't cash. So yeah, so then the final table, which was interesting, and this is how quickly things can change, right? So I had two big blinds left, and I was in the big blind. So one was already in, right? So I was I didn't even look at my cards, right? Under the gun was this Howard Tahoe Andrew, the bracelet winner, and older guy. He's like probably in his 80s, but still sharp as a tack.
Oh, yeah.
Player. plays out here all the time. And so he raised. Another guy called all in. And it gets to me, and obviously I'm going to call, right?
Right.
And he's like, you guys weren't supposed to call. He turns over his hand, had three aces in his hand. I had something like king, nine, five, six, something terrible, right? Flop came with three of my cards, so I flopped three pair. I'm like, this is great. Turns a queen, river's a queen. So he wins with three aces in his hand because there's a pair on board, and I'm like, what?
That's sick.
Terrible way to go out, and then of course he goes out the next hand and then they chop. So brutal.
Oh, that is sick.
But no, I didn't have much else luck this time. I went out in the high 20s. I was like in the low 30s for Omaha yesterday, I think. Took a shot at No Limit Hold'em last night. Actually flopped. I got frisky. I opened the pot with the nine deuce of diamonds.
What?
Well, you know, in position, I like to play some of those cards, and if I hit, then you know, no one knows, and stealing the blinds, and all kinds of things like that, and mix it up. You know, if I have to show that hand, then I get some advertising. I had a hand earlier where I raised with the five deuce of diamonds, and the turn gave me the wheel, which was nice. Didn't get paid off on it, but I wanted to kind of show that one to show people I was playing. But so nine deuce, flop comes deuce, deuce, queen. Like the best thing ever could happen when you're getting frisky like that, right?
Yeah.
And bet and get called. Turn is the ace. I think I checked maybe that time. Slow down. Check behind. And then, no, I bet again. Got called. And then on the river, completed Broadway. So it must have been like, I think it went king, queen, turn river, right? Well, my last opponent actually was sticking in with those cards, but I'm like, I'll check and kind of induce him to bluff at me, right? Checked, and he moved all in, and I'm like, all right. And I had him covered, so that's made my decision easy, but I'm not going to go out on this hand. Called, he turns over pocket aces.
Oh, man.
I'm like, wow. So yeah, people like all over the board looking crazy because one, he didn't re-raise me pre-flop.
Yeah.
So it was kind of getting tricky. Got trapped and then got out of it by hitting this two outer. And then people were looking at me like raising with nine deuces of diamonds and actually hitting and then losing. So I got knocked out of there. So the only highlight is here in Omaha 8, I did win a hand with ace high. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Wow.
You turn the cards over and everybody's looking, and it's like three of us in the hand too, right? And we're all looking at each other's cards. The dealer trying to read hands, and they're like, "Wow, you guys have nothing." And I'm like, "I have an ace." It's like,
I'm not sure, but I think that happened in the home game last time we played, where we had an Omaha 8 and everyone's going for low and everything, and then we look around, and we're like, "What's the high?" And I think someone won the high with ace high, but it might have been like a pair of sevens, but it felt like it was ace high. But that's really crazy when that happens, especially in a tournament when you got 10 people around getting four or whatever, getting four cards and. Man, that's crazy. So how long are you out there for?
I fly home Monday. Last event, the main event is Saturday. Actually, a couple good events. Today, Thursday, Thanksgiving, is just satellites for the main event. A lot of satellites going on, so the main event's going to be pretty big, I think. Tomorrow, we got a couple big buy-in No Limit Hold'em events I'm probably going to skip. And then Saturday is the main event. 2 day, but one single flight. And then Sunday they'll finish it up, and we have two more tournaments left. So a lot of excitement going on here with Player of the Year race and who's going to be on the cover of the magazine for winning the main event. And then I do the Red High home Monday and back in Florida Tuesday. And warm and toasty.
Excellent.
So anyhow, if you guys are out here or you want to make it out here, antiupmagazine.com/Thunder Valley, all the information.
You're the man.
All right, so I saw this story last week, and I kind of wanted to talk to you about it. It's pretty much the headline was, "Can live streaming save the poker industry?" And that's what Cameron Tung asked in this recent essay on TheNewYorker.com. And the article focuses on Jason Somerville, who we all know, you know, the poker pro who is apparently the flagship poker streamer on Twitch.com, which everybody's talking about now. Yeah. And he there he routinely broadcasts his online poker sessions for hours at a time. They say sometimes it goes on 8-9 hours, right? And does commentary where he mixes in strategy advice with social commentary, and people can watch him play, obviously. And so I guess I'm wondering, seeing as the first poker book was fueled by TV, can Twitch and web-only Poker Central fuel our first poker boom? Sorry, not poker book.
Yeah, fixing that for us in the notes now. I'm like, what poker book? Are you talking about, like, the Super Sims? What are you talking about?
Who wrote this? And I'm like, I wrote this.
I fixed both books into booms for you now so you can read it.
Start that line up. Seeing as the first poker boom was fueled by TV, can Twitch and web-only Poker Central fuel the next boom with online content streaming? Go.
No. I'm sorry, no. You know, I think when you think about the first boom, you know, TV, you're right. When you say it fueled it, yeah, it helped. But it wasn't just TV. There were some other things that were going on. Online poker was really just exciting and new. We had a world champion who turned online poker for $40 into $2.5 million. And then there was lipstick cams, and it was new to us. Now, the game was new to us, really. We all know how to play poker, but the way we saw it and presented it was new to us. This is just a smaller version of what we've already known for the last decade or so, and I think it's cool, but I don't think this can generate what the other things generate. And again, I don't know why it would need to, I don't think the industry needs saving. It may need, you know, if you want to get it back to its numbers that it was, but it's still the industry itself, poker itself, it's not dying. It's just not what it was.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I would say no. I would say this could never generate a boom. I it could continue on the plateau that we're on right now. It could maybe draw in some people, but it seems to me that is something that's only going to draw in people who already are into poker. It's going to need, to get another boom, we're going to need money infused into the system, and that would be online or some other creative way of bringing poker to people that, which I don't know what that is yet, maybe it doesn't exist yet, but I don't think this is it. I enjoy, you know, live streaming's been around for a while, but it's been of tournaments. It's not of one person doing things, but even that, I mean, YouTube is full of, you know, I mean, I don't know what it's like on the other social media stuff, but I mean, on YouTube, it's full of all kinds of poker stuff that you can watch anytime you want. What's the difference between watching it live and watching it on there? I don't think that's going to generate a boom at all.
Well, I think there's a little bit of difference, and not necessarily the Poker Central, which we've already talked about, but this the Twitch stuff where you're actually watching somebody play and they're telling you how they're playing. That's pretty powerful stuff. I think back in the day, and there's probably still some places to do that. That's stuff you had to pay for. You know, you go to somebody's website and say, hey, you know, I'll give you whatever, $100, whatever, and you can tune in and watch me play, and I'll tell you how to play and actually learn. The fact that the Twitch is making people feel like doing this for free or less money or whatever, it's definitely an interesting thing, I think, to actually be able to watch one person play and see how they play. Now, I guess what I would say is that the difference between this and the TV boom was that the TV boom reached people that didn't know about poker, right?
Right.
You're flipping channels and like, oh, what's this game? All right, I'll watch it for a while, right? You're not flipping channels on the web. Right. You're only going to get to watch Jason Somerville if you know about Jason Somerville or this Poker Central, which, by the way, actually, you know, we talked about where we could find Poker Central. I finally fired up my Amazon Fire Stick last week before we left, and that's where you can watch it, is on the Fire Stick.
Okay, it's web.
So, Yeah, so I think what this is going to do, it's going to engage poker players more. I think this is an interesting thing for a lot of people. I don't have the stamina to sit and watch somebody play poker for 8 hours, but I know lots of people do. I think it's interesting, and it's going to keep poker players engaged, but certainly doesn't have the potential I don't see right now of bringing new players into the game. You know, unless you're just hanging out with your buddy and you're like, what are you doing tonight? Oh, I'm watching a guy play poker on Twitch. You're like, what? You're like, no, really, come on, it's interesting, and maybe you pull it in that way, but it's certainly not going to have the same effect.
Right. Yeah, I just don't see it being a boom. I see it continuing, maybe adding stuff to what's available, but this is more, to me, it's more of just feeding what we already are hungry for. It's not bringing in new people. That's what a boom does. A boom opens the eyes of people who have no idea what's going on and excites them. And then, on top of it, not only could you see it on TV and get excited about it, but then there was the online thing that you said, I don't even have to leave the house. I don't have to go sit with strangers or smelly people who don't get themselves some clean, as Scott liked to say. So now all of a sudden you put those two together, and then there's a hero out there who's just like me who turned $40 on this online thing and did it on TV and turned $2. That is a boom. There's still, hey, you can't play online unless you want to lose your money unless you're in three of these states. That's not available. So there's no way for you to even get excited about it. And then, like you said, unless you know Jason Somerville, unless you already know about poker, it's not going to be a boom. It might keep up the status quo, and maybe down the road, if the boom does happen for some other reason, then this thing might take off. But it's going to be hard for it to be a boom to me. I just don't see that happening.
All right, this one is kind of a special to me because I've always been a fan of this artist because I'm a big into art, right? But Poker Game, one of the ubiquitous dogs playing poker paintings from Cassius Coolidge, sold at auction for $658,000. He painted this back in 1894, and he painted a lot of other ones too. You know, I have one on my wall where we play poker at home.
Yeah.
To be my mouse pad. It's also my my checks, and I'll pause for laughter for people out there. I still have a checkbook. But yeah, my check is one of these Cassius Coolidge paintings too. So I thought that was kind of cool. $658,000.
That's crazy. I just brought that up yesterday when I saw it on the file. They talked about it was like an episode of some show I was watching or whatever, and they're like, yeah, your idea of art is dogs playing poker. And I'm like, hey, $658,000. Don't be dissing my
art.
Cassius Coolidge art, man. $658,000. And that thing was painted over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy. All right, any updates? Restock the shelves. Horseshoe Hammond Casino near Chicago. Tampa Bay Downs and Tampa Greyhound Track in Tampa, Florida. Park West Casino Sonoma in California Wine Country. Harris Cherokee in North Carolina, Daytona Beach Kennel Club in Florida, and Running Aces Card Club near Minneapolis are the latest rooms to commit to hosting an event for NEF's Restock the Shelves Charity Food Bank Initiative with Blue Shark Optics. Get details on all of the Restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team NEUP by visiting NEUPmagazine.com/restock and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event too.
I'll put that in there. It's January 18th.
Yeah, the event's January 18th.
And we definitely need volunteers for Team Annie Up at all these properties and other ones, too. So go to that website and volunteer.
And if you like to play poker and you like to drink, you're not going to want to miss our January 24th Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Los Angeles. All of our guests on that sailing on NCL's Jewel, which is heading to the Mexican Riviera, will get a complimentary drink package, which allows unlimited alcohol and non-alcoholic drinks up to $15 each for the entire sailing. We no longer have staterooms in our control, but have still been getting them at or near our contract rate of $7.99 per person based on double occupancy. So call today, maybe not Thanksgiving, but call today before our ship sells out.
And
get all the details on this cruise and our three other sailings next year, including one to Alaska, which is getting a ton of buzz and a lot of people already signing up for it at AnnieUpCruises.com. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is a 30-minute telephone lesson and workbook from Thomas Gallagher Casino Seminars, which specializes in poker odds and math at poker911.net. Comes from Steen... I don't even pronounce it.
You didn't even get the first name.
I didn't get the first name yet. Tim... It looks like it's Steinkaway. How's that sound? Steinkaway?
Sure. I'm just glad you had to say it now.
Yeah, Tim Steinkaway. He wants to know, why is it that none of the big dogs from the heyday play in the World Series of Poker? No Howard Lederer, Chris Ferguson, or any full-tilt pimpers?
Well, first of all, I want to say Tim posted this on our good partner, PokerRadius.com, where our Anti-Up group discussions are, so you can join that conversation there. Tell Tim what you think directly there. My answer is, I think the people he listed are not necessarily the big dogs from the heyday. They are part of the big dogs, right?
Yeah.
So he's talking about the full tilt big dogs, right?
Yeah.
And that's a different story. I think a lot of those big dogs back in the day that I think of are still playing the World Series of Poker. It's just the people that got mixed up in this company that screwed everyone that are lying a little low.
Yeah.
I think Howard still plays from time to time. I hear people saying that they saw him play. I actually haven't heard anything from Chris Ferguson in forever. You know, there are some other full tilt players that are still out there. Obviously, Jennifer Harmon just got inducted in the Poker Hall of Fame and still plays, not as much. Phil Ivey obviously is edge sorting all over the world, still playing. But I would say to the ones that he says for missing, it's kind of tough to walk into a poker room when, you know, half or three fourths or 90% of the people at the table had to wait 2 or 3 years to get their money back from the site that you were associated with, right?
Yeah. And some of you didn't even get it back.
Yeah, true.
The other question, too, is how do you know? I mean, I don't know. Well, how do you know that they're not? Was he at the World Series and was looking at every single day?
Well,
and,
yeah. Maybe they didn't cash. Maybe it's probably the better way of saying it.
Maybe why didn't they? Because he says playing.
Hell, but they cashed, right? But,
you know, I think they're still playing. I think they're just, they might be playing when you're not there or they're not cashing. But for a lot of these people, it's about the cash games for them and the other tournaments and stuff too. So I just don't know. I can't speak intelligently about why they're not there or if they're there at all. I have no idea. I wasn't there for the World Series this year. So, but yeah, you can speculate that anybody from Full Tilt who's not showing their face is clearly a reason for that. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Our good friend David Bloomberg, speaking of Survivor, he says, in a 1-2 no-limit casino cash game, there is a bet of $22. A very eccentric guy who uses weird phrases says, two on top, and then pushes out $22. Four red chips and two white chips on top. Normally saying anything on top is a raise. Would that be the case here? If so, clearly you can't raise $2. So what would the raise be? A min raise because you can't only raise $2? Or would it be $200 more because that would be the lowest amount that two on top could mean? Yes, this guy needs to learn to say what he really means, which is, in this case was just call, and for some reason he was explaining the obvious, that there were two white chips on top of his four reds.
Elliot says, while saying you were putting something on top while placing your bet could be a raise in many spots. In this case, it is not. Two is less than 10, which would have been half the current $20 raise, so a min raise should not be enforced. We can't assume $200 because we're not allowed to assume the thoughts and mindsets of the players when non-standard statements are made while a bet is being completed. Eventually, if the player in question doesn't learn to verbalize his intentions correctly, he's going to make a goofy statement in a spot where it'll cost him a lot of chips.
Yeah.
So pretty much it's just a wait and see. Eventually the guy's going to hang himself and he's going to quit doing the stupid two on top.
I tell you, sometimes I get really worried about, like, people who don't understand how to play or understand, or they just like to be cute. I get worried when I'm in situations like that because I think something's going to happen. Like take my father, for instance. When I play with my dad, you know, we play for fun, we're family and everything. And so every once in a while, you know, we're getting into a big hand and he'll go flush. And I have top two or something, and I'm about to discard it, and I'm like, wait a minute, it's my father. Let me see it, Dad. And then he won't have a flush. He'll be busting my balls. And I'm thinking, Dad, don't ever do this in a poker room, you know, because you're being cute and we're in the family and stuff, but if we were really playing for money somewhere and you did that, I mean, you'd get killed. And so I always, when people do stuff like that, to on top and stuff, you're only creating confusion. And I know you're trying to have fun, but have fun in different ways. Don't have fun at other people's expense. Don't blow other people's minds or let them get ticked off so much that they're going to want to hurt you or something. You know. When we were on the cruise ship with my parents years ago and they had a poker room and I went in there, not a poker room, but a poker game, and I went and played, and my mom and dad were considering playing, I'm like, don't play. please don't play. Because my dad's going to want to be like, I got a flush. And then he's not going to really have a flush. And they're going to throw him off the ship. And I don't want that. So when you're playing poker, you want to be a wise guy. Do it when the cards aren't in play. You know, want to be funny. You know, this stuff, to me, really doesn't get on my nerves, but it's just sort of aggravating, really.
It's aggravating. It definitely is. And I don't think the players that do it to be aggravating. They're out there having a good time. They probably, learn to play the game in a home game or in the Navy or somewhere where that kind of stuff happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's part of what they do, and they just haven't yet been taught that that was fun there. But here, it annoys people, and it potentially could get you in trouble. And it's tough because you don't want to be that guy that tells that guy, hey, cut that out.
Yeah.
Quit saying that. And maybe you are. maybe we more of us need to be that guy that says that. But I think Elliot's right. Eventually, those people are going to make that mistake. They're probably going to get upset about it, and they're also going to learn from it, and they're going to go, okay, fine. Now I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, the lessons I learned when I lose money, I want them to learn because I made a bad play. If it's etiquette and I lose money to etiquette, that is not acceptable. So,
right, but you're going to remember it.
I know. I'm just saying, if I'm going to lose money, I want to remember, like, okay, I'm not going to raise in that situation again or something. I don't want it to be like, hey, I'm all in. No, I'm not really all in, and then I lose my entire, I don't want that to happen. You got to, learn when to open your mouth and when not to, and learn from the right things, not from the wrong. It's just, that's just not right. Don't lose money that way.
Don't do that.
Hey, we got an O'Malley's move to be completed today. Very excited. I'm thankful for O'Malley. Here we go, part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are opening a brand new $1, $2, No Limit Hold'em Casino cash game. 8 players sit down, and it's split right down the middle. 4 of us bought in for $200, and 4 of us bought in for $100 or less. We are in the MP, and it's folded to us with the Ace of Hearts, Ace of Diamonds. Wow, first hand we get pocket rockets. We don't want to fool around too much here, we bump it up to $12. It's folded around to the cutoff, who makes a quick call. The rest of the table folds. The cutoff is a younger guy wearing a hooded sweatshirt with the hood down, dark aviator sunglasses, and a baseball cap. However, that's all we have to go off this guy. He also bought in for $200. With roughly $25 in the pot, the flop seems pretty safe. The Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs, Four of Spades comes down. We have no information to go off, but we have a pretty strong hand. The odds of him having a queen are not all that great. We want to make him pay if he has any kind of a weird draw, which, let's be honest, there aren't many. But if we bet big enough and he comes over the top, we have no problem laying this hand down. We make it $20 to go. The cutoff thinks for a short while before cutting out 4 red chips and tossing them in. It's getting interesting. There's about $60 in the pot, max rake has been reached, and the turn is the 10 of spades. This is seemingly a blank. I'm pretty sure we have the best hand here. With $60 in the pot, we make it $35 to go, a little more than half the pot, leaving us with about $135 behind. Our opponent once again thinks only for a short while before announcing raise and pushing in the remainder of his chips. So, are we way ahead or way behind? Are we calling? What's the move?
All right, I love this one because I think there's more to it than people might think. So, obviously, I'm going to tell what I mean by this. So, again, we're reminded of the power position. Our opponent here could just as easily have the queen or better, as he could be just representing the queen. It's really hard for us to know, especially since it's a new table. We have nothing to go on. So, obviously, the safe play here is not to go broke on the first hand until you get some information. But I think there's another thing to consider here, and I'm interested to talk to you about this. Half of this table bought in for less than $100, so they must be playing with our friend Sean from last week's show, right, from California.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be hard to make money at this table. And so right now we find ourselves in an all-in situation with one of the other players who bought in for the max. We have a decent hand. It might not be the best hand, obviously. But that's pretty enticing to me. So if we came to this casino with more than one bullet, I think this is a chance to take this bullet now and try to double up and get some money out of a game that's going to be like watching paint dry. But if this is my only bullet for the night, then I think the safe play is to lay it down and wait for better information.
Well, it's interesting you say that. The fact that they bought in for, you know, less than 100, you're right. It's going to be difficult to make some money, but you can also make people uncomfortable, like you said. If you do take this chance, double up now. Now you can start to use that stack against people. So that
true, but now you're talking dollars at a time rather than playing for stacks, which is usually what you're trying to do in No Limit.
One of my favorite things back in the day when I used to fly to Connecticut and go to Foxwoods every time I went because I didn't really have a chance to play No Limit down here. Now I don't do it as often. Was when they would start a new table, and I was part of the new table, and I'm on the list, and they start a new table, and everybody's just down with the same amount. I love that because now there's not some bully at the table, and you're all starting with the same amount, and to me, they're still learning on how people are going to play and everything, so you can be aggressive early. I like that kind of thing. So here, you know, if they're buying in for a little bit, you're already knowing that most of these people are probably either timid or incredibly crazy. You know, so I'm going to want some chips to deal with this. So I like the idea of doubling up here and or getting, you know, a decent stack here. I can't fold, to be honest with you. The pot's over $100. Why would he shove with a queen? I'm calling and thinking he might have picked up a draw or even hit a 10 or something there. I'm not folding. And if I'm, like you said, if I'm broke, I buy in again.
Yeah, the other thing about what you're saying, too, is that if we're wrong, and we do call, and we're wrong, and we have to rebuy in for 200, we still have leverage over half the table.
Yeah, like exactly.
That. It's just if we hit it, and then we have leverage over the entire table. So we're not really giving up that. Obviously, we're giving up our initial buy-in, which hurts, and it'll be tough to dig that out if we're wrong. But I think it puts us in a good spot here if we make this call and we're right.
Yeah, and if you're doing the stereotyping of the people at the table, he's got a hoodie, he's generally aggressive, he may not believe us, and that's what they do, you know what I mean? He's got the hoodie, the sunglasses, the ball cap, and all, he's fitting it to a T, and, you know, and he's real aggressive, and he's one of those guys that, you know, the minute you show any kind of, you know, weak bet or whatever, or if he just thinks you're just C-betting, you know, he's going to shove on you, and he's got a draw, or he hit the 10, doesn't think you have anything, so you have ace-king or something. You know, we got aces here. You know, unless he had a queen, why is he shoving? He's got a queen. There's no reason to shove here. Didn't get that scary. Why, two spades picked up on the turn? Big deal. You know, why not just call and let us keep betting into him? If we check the river, then he'll bet. But why shove here? There's no reason to shove unless, you know what I mean, unless you're... There's just no reason to shove if you have the queen right now. There really isn't. You know, unless you're trying to protect against something now. But that's just ridiculous. And why shove? Why not just raise? So to me, it feels like we haven't beat. I'm going to call, and like you said, if I don't double up, I can buy in for I normally buy in and still have a bigger stack than more than half the table. So I'm calling.
All right,
here we go.
Hello again. I really had to stop and think about this one. We've committed about 33% of our stack to this hand, and at this point, we have to call 135 to win about 260. That's a little less than 2-1 odds. So ultimately, this is a gut check. Either he's got the queen, or he doesn't. I mean, I guess it could be tens, but if that were the case, we'd still be in the same situation. We do the math in our head, size up our opponent, who isn't being any help at all. I mean, he's literally sitting there motionless, like a statue, and ultimately decide we don't want to go bust on the first hand. We muck the aces without showing. Our opponent does the same and rakes in the pot. We rebuy back up to 200. Until next time, I am Malcolm O'Malley saying a bad fold is always better than a bad call. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, yeah, as I said, a fold here is a safe play. And also, to kind of get into the psychology of sessions that many of our listeners like to vilify me for, it's really hard mentally, I think, to come back and book a winning session when you go broke on the first hand. I think it just messes with your mind, right? Especially if you lose it with aces. So all in all, it might have been the proper move, even if it wasn't the right move.
You know, I hate it when we don't know the opponent's cards in these things. But again, that's true to life, so you don't get to know the cards in real life either. So I'll stand by my call and whatever. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is if I, you know, if you fold, you're still alive, and maybe you do get that money. I don't know if I agree with that whole thing you just said about if I go broke on the first hand, at least then it's the slate is clean.
Well, it depends on who you are. I mean, Obviously it's different. I mean, there's some people that will bounce right back, but I think there's a lot of people that it's just going to, I'm like, God, laces on the first hand, and I lose my stack, and and you just feel like you're playing catch up, or even if you're playing well and it takes a while to get that money back, you go home feeling bad.
Yeah.
And again, that's not the right way to play, but it's just you got to know your mindset. That's what I always try to tell people. I'm not trying to tell you this is the way to do it. I'm telling you, know your mindset. If you're in the mindset where, oh, no big deal, you know, I got it in, I thought it was good and wasn't, then fine, do that all day long. Yeah. But there's a lot of players that can't shake that off, I don't think.
Well, we learned a lot today from you.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And this week we have a situation.
Situation.
It's from a longtime listener, Justin Harrow. So I'm just going to read through the whole thing, and then we'll go back and dissect it, right?
All right.
All right. He's playing 1-2 no limit at the Borgata. Bought in for 300. Worked is stacked up north of 600 in the last hour or a half or so. He says he's probably seen as a table captain that has been opening a lot and hitting hands, which allowed me to work my stack. Most recently, I checked my option, the big blind with pocket trays, and flopped a set, rivered a boat, small blind, rivered trips, and I took his stack. All right, so we're the big bully at the table, right?
Okay.
We are under the gun with queen of clubs, queen of diamonds, raised a 10, fold to the cutoff, who calls, and he started the hand with $60, and the button calls, who started the hand with $600.
Oof.
Flop is ace of clubs, queen of spades, eight of spades, and we lead for 15. And he says, I want to lead on the smaller side to look a little weak, try to get the short stack to shove all in a little wider. If he shoves and the button cold calls, I have left myself enough. Sure enough, this is exactly what happens. So now the cutoff has gone all in for 50. The big blind has called to 50. It's back on us. What's our move? He says, I thought about raising to 200 and see what the button does. Problem is, if I do that, his range is pretty much exclusively a flush draw or 8-8. I feel he would raise 8-8 on his own, which leaves flush draw as his sole range. If I raise to 200, he has to call 150 to win 210, if my math is correct. So he is getting the right price. 200 is also a huge bet in the 1-2 game. In the end, I liked it just a shove, trying to make my hand look like maybe I had the flush draw. I was just trying to isolate the short stack. Button ends up tanking for a minute and calls with the nut flush draw, and also has a pair of aces. He said, my favorite part is when he goes, I put you on ace-queen, so I figured my two pair outs were good. Hello, ace-queen is two pair. Anyway, the turn is a brick, and the river's a spade, and he scoops the $1,300 pot. He put $500 in on a bare flush draw into a $160 pot and got there. Needless to say, I was very tilted. Now, I did get to put all his money in at terrible odds, but the question is, if I raised a 200-ish, I could shove non-spade turns and reevaluate if the spade comes. This is why playing in position is so important. The short stack had ace 8 for 2 pair and 1 out, but it takes away some of my boat outs, which is annoying. What do you guys think?
Well, that's a lot to take in. I agree. I don't think he should have shoved. That's a lot of money. What's the point of having deep stacks if you're just going to shove them like a short stack?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, we don't have the nuts here. You know, we have the second nuts.
Right.
It was raised and called preflop. There's nothing that says the guy couldn't have had ace-ace. Not saying he did. Not saying you're playing that way. But
I raised with aces this week, so.
Yeah, and here's the deal. I agree. I think we just, even if we make it 150 and he calls, okay, you want him to call there with a flush draw. And then if the flush draw gets around the turn, and then you slow down, and then he bets, you can call that bet, and then make a reevaluation again, and maybe you hit your boat on the end. You know, obviously this didn't happen because you did shoving, and you're not going to... But if you're playing it street by street, when a blank comes on a turn, yes, then you can bet legitimately. You know, let's say you made it 150, and then he just calls again on that flop raise. So now there's 300, and then so now you've got about 400 or so. Now when you make the bet of like 250, 300 on the turn with one to come, he's letting it go. But because you got it in, all he guy's like, you know what, I'll gamble. And here's 600 in the middle, and I'll gamble for a $1,300 pot. But I don't think he's going to gamble with one card to go, and I don't think he's going to shove on you if you make it 150. And you're going to call him if he shoves on you anyway, so why shove first? Because you want to isolate for $50 or $100? I mean, you're trying to make money here, not get in and flip coins.
Best year, yeah.
Yeah, so just if you're going to re-raise again to make it 150, so what if he gets the right odds to call? You want the flush draws calling. You just want them to not get there. And when it doesn't get there on the turn, then you put the hammer down because you're first to act. And then if he's going to call, then he's making a huge mistake no matter what amount you bet. You know,
right.
if it's within reason, it's more than half the pot. So I can't imagine this guy calling on that turn when it's a blank, and you, if it's a pot, as I don't think pot amount is because we're talking about it real quickly, but you make a $250, $300 bet there, he's not calling. And if he does, he's making a huge mistake. And then at that point, if he does call and the flush gets there, you check behind, maybe he value bets, and you still don't lose your whole 600. Who knows? But to me, that was a huge shove. That's a huge shove.
Right, right.
You agree?
There's so much value with it, I think. I mean, obviously, I can't believe the guy called either. So, I mean, he's right. I mean, the one thing you take out of this is that your opponent made a terrible mistake and just got there. So, you know, you want to put him in the little mind bank. And if you see him at the Borgata, you want to be at his table all the time, get that money back.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell me I'm wrong, Chris.
Okay.
Just like every time I'm on the show.
Yeah, we pretty much do that every show.
Specifically telling you I can.
All right, cool.
So I'm curious about this. So if we don't shove here, and whether we just, I guess what I'm saying is when we get to the turn, if that flush card comes and our opponent does have the flush draw, which he did, so he hits the flush, what percentage of the time do you think that opponent's going to bet when we check?
Well, I think he's going to bet probably... He's not going to slow play it. That's why he's playing the hand, and he wants to get value for it. Plus, he's going to want to stop, although he has the nut flush, right? So he's going to want to stop two pair of sets.
I'm giving you an opportunity to tell me I'm wrong. I think that there's a fair chance that if a guy's playing a bare flush draw, as he is here, hits that flush, and we check, obviously, then he might just check behind to kind of put some doubt in our mind whether he actually was on the flush draw. And try to induce us to bet the river, which we're going to have to, right? I mean, if he checks behind, at that point, we got to try to bet with our set, and then he raises us at that point and says, ooh, gotcha. I mean, it's not a very sophisticated move, I know, but I think in 1-2, I think I see that a lot. So I guess my point is that gives us a free card to boat up if we miss.
Well, so you think that there's a chance that he won't, and that's why you're saying to check, because you're saying you think he won't bet the turn, and then if he does get the flush on the end instead of the turn, you're willing to take that chance, is what you're saying?
Well, I'm willing to take the chance that if the flush card comes on the turn, that he's probably going to check behind to kind of trap me, and if he does, that gives me outs to get my boat.
Yeah, I don't think so. I would say it's better than 75% of the time people bet there, because here's the deal. One, they're in this hand to make money. They're losing a street of value. Two, the types of hands that would raise pre-flop and then that flop comes are going to hit him. So you want to get value for that. If the guy is ace-king, if he doesn't believe you have a flush draw, he's going to call anything you bet if it's reasonable. You want to get value for those hands. If he had ace-king, he's going to hit aces with a king-kicker top-top. And then if he has ace-queen, he's got top-two. You don't want this guy to boat up for free. If he's got a set of eights, you want him to boat up for free or quad up for free. So I don't think that they're going to just check behind in a pre... If it would be one thing if... It'd be one thing if it was sort of like you're a heads up and you could put the guy in the exact hand and stuff like that. But you got three people in the pot, which
yeah,
I know
one's
one
all
of them's already all in, but
still, you know, heads up.
Yeah, they're heads up that way. But I don't think that we were the initial aggressive preflop raiser, and we're under the gun, so we're doing that with ace king, aces, queens, you know, ace king suited, whatever, and ace queen. If we're doing that with those hands, we've crushed it, and if we're crushed it, then the other guy's going to say, he crushed it. I got my flush draw. I got to get money on him because he's going to call. Why would I check behind and lose the street of value and give him a chance to catch up?
Right. That's probably the best answer. We're probably still going to call if he makes a reasonable bet, right?
Yeah. So why check? I don't want to lose money on it. So,
okay.
But again, even all that, right, though, still is better than shoving, because now if you check and he hits the turn flush, he'll bet like 100. You still have your outs. If you don't believe him, you'll call your – even if he bets like 100 or 75 or something – you have 600 in your stack, so you're going to call, and then you can still hit your outs. And at the end, if he shoves on you, you know, you can check again. And now you're like, all right, I believe he's got the flush. I've only got a set. I don't even have the nuts anymore. I can lay it down and just be pissed off that I had a set of queens and lost.
Sure.
You know, but I would think someone would bet that, given the way this was played.
Right,
I think
right. Someone
bets that flush on
the
turn.
Okay, so we've established that there is going to be a bet on the turn if the flush gets there. That means we have to raise now, right? So it's just a matter of how much we raise on the flop.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Is I think I would just do the regular 3x of what was bet. So the 50, if I can make it 150, I would probably make it 150.
All right.
And then when he calls the 150, that the flush gets there and we check behind, if he bets like 100, that's reasonable to me. If I have a set of queens, I'd probably call 100 in that pot, knowing that he could be trying to represent the flush and was floating. And right. Now I've got reasons to call. And then if I boat up then or quad up, then that's, you know, that's just a safety net. But right now, I don't necessarily have to believe he has the flush. But if I truly believe it, I'll check again on the river if I miss my boat or quads. And then if he bets something reasonable, I might call again just to get value. And if not, then, you know, if he shoves, then I can reevaluate and say, you know what? It's one hand. Okay, I lost a couple, but I built my stack up from, what do you start with, 3, and now he's got 6. I'm down to, like, 350 or 450 now, whatever it would be. But I'm clearly playing better than everybody at this table. This is one hand in a session of lifetime. So, you know, let me just, you know, grin and throw the cards in and say, next hand, you know? I mean, I just don't. I don't like that shove. That shove is just way too big for that game. And the one guy who has the same amount as you at the table, and you're getting in with him on a draw versus a set, that's just scary to me.
The worst thing about the shove here, too, is you're right. It was incorrect. But it should have worked in getting the flush draw out, right?
Yeah.
So the worst thing about it is it was the bad move from without even knowing what our opponent's going to do, right? And then our opponent did the absolute worst thing and got there.
Yeah.
We made a bad move. Our opponent made a bad call and got there. It just hurts twice. It's like two knives in the stomach.
It's brutal. That's brutal. It happens. That's why you're in the game, you know. But that's the thing, is he was already up a bunch. So he was clearly outplaying these people and having a nice session. And then he just flipped coins with someone, you know. It's like when you one of the books.
I don't know if you flip coins. I mean,
you know what I mean. He got it in good, but he didn't have to bet that much. Betting in that much, you know, he's taking a chance that this guy would call on a flush draw, and now you're flipping coins. Now it's like, okay, you got outs, but he's got a flush draw outs. And to me, when you can outplay people, they talk about it in these books. They say if you're going up against an opponent you know is better than you, you want to play big pots with them because. It's your only that's your leverage. It's your only chance of leveling the playing field is by playing big pots with them because they're going to play you skillfully better if you're trying to play every street with him and betting amounts and getting crafty. So you want to shove against the players that are way better than you, and you want to play big pots with them. Same here. You've been out playing this table all day. Why do you want to mix up with another guy who's got 600 and then give him a shot at just getting your money without any skill? You know.
Right.
So I wouldn't want to do that. I would want to just play it normally and try to control the pot size here, because you've been doing all night. You know, why change your way now? Just because he gets the right odds for the bet that you're making, that's not a reason to not shove. That's not a reason to shove, you know. Okay, so you try to come up with a number where he doesn't get the right amount, you know, and bet that amount. But if it's too much and it makes you automatically shove, then maybe you don't bet. Maybe you do check, like you said. You know, who knows? But I'm not checking set there. I can't just call the 50 or whatever. I think I need to make more money in there with that set. Middle set and hold them is huge.
Sure. Fair enough.
But yeah, that's tough. That sucks that you lost all that. But hey, you got to be on the show this week. Hey, man, have a good Thanksgiving.
Hey, you too.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.